Well, we have a special treat today. We have a missionary couple that's going to come and share with us, Jeremy and Claudia Hazel. And they were here January of 2015, I think. We figured it out because that's when we were on our family vacation cruise trip. And they filled in, so obviously I didn't get to hear them and heard some wonderful testimonies about your talk. And at that time, for those of you who may not remember or may not have been here, they were getting ready to embark on their missionary journey, their initial one, to a country, and I want to try to say this right, Namibia? No, I didn't say it right. Namibia. Well, that was pretty close. So they're back, and they're going to be sharing with us what God has been doing in their lives, and there's, I guess, some changes in the future about their missionary mission, so they'll be sharing that with us, too. Claudia is kind of family here. She's got connections with Gladys Stout. She's kind of been adopted into their family, I think the best way to state that. Has been going to the Phillips family reunion, she said, for the last 30 years, so she's family. And so we appreciate having you back, appreciate having you in the family here, and we're excited to hear what God has. So, Jeremy, if you want to come up, and Claudia, if you're coming up too now, I don't know if you are or not, but... And she said she's nervous, by the way. She doesn't like public speaking, so we really have to make her feel welcome, okay? All right.
I'm going to let her stay there because I'll talk for a little while. All right. Well, yeah, I'm going to slide to the side here so you can see the screen. So what I wanted to do is just kind of start off with just saying, what is our mission? What really drives us? Why do we do what we do? Why do we go where we go and endure what we endure sometimes? And with that, our mission really is unreached people, unreached people groups. And in particular, I kind of want to unpack that for you. So if you bear with me for just a few minutes, let me just kind of unpack it to kind of say this is kind of where we're going. So if you go to the next slide, please, sir. And we'll skip the one that... All right, so what is an unreached people group? An unreached people group is defined by as an identifiable people group in which there are no indigenous community of believing Christians with adequate numbers of resources to evangelize this people group. In other words, in plain man's terms, missionologists have determined this to be basically less than 2% of the total people group. In other words, if less than 2% of that people group professes to know Christ, then it is classified as unreached. Okay, does that make sense? So in Africa in particular, there are more than 3,700 unique African people groups in the world, but there's about 1,000 still left. Okay, so in the continent of Africa, there's 1,000 unreached people groups still who there's not a church that is reproducing, that is making disciples. Some of them haven't even heard about Jesus yet. Some might have heard about Jesus through some other missionary work, but they might not have accepted the teachings. So that is kind of what the framework of where we operate in, is our vision, our mission, our goal is to go to unreached people groups, to bring the gospel of Jesus Christ and to plant churches, to come alongside and to plant culturally appropriate churches, and then to come alongside the pastor, who would be a local, and encourage and teach them and train them. And our goal, actually, the team that we're going to be joining here when we go back, actually has an exit strategy. We say if they do this, if they have churches that are established, and if they're discipling, and if they're sending people out, then there is no reason for us to be there anymore. We need to leave, and we need to go to another unreached people group. And so that's kind of what drives us. So that might help give you some context to share what I'm about to share. If you go to the next slide, please. David Livingstone, the famous missionary to Africa back in the 1800s, he's famous for, of course, the phrase, Dr. Livingstone, I presume. He said, "I don't care where we go as long as we go forward." And right now, that's kind of where Claudia and I are. When we last were here, we were on our way to Namibia, to Chumkwe, Namibia, to live with the Bushmen. And just basically real quick, we were hoping to be there for 2 years. The Namibian government only granted our work visa for 1 year. Some of our teammates for the team that we were part of got 2 years. Some got 1 year. We have no clue why. Long story short, that visa ended in November. We put in a renewal request. The government denied our renewal request. The villagers said, no, we want these people to live with us. They filled out appeals on our behalf, turned them into the government. We were told this will take about 10 days to get handled. No problem. Great. So we're in the capital. After about 3 weeks of waiting, so 21 days, we were like, don't know if anything is going to come through. It was the holidays time. Ames said, that's okay. Why don't you come home for the holidays? Let them work out, you know, the paperwork stuff. It's the holidays. The government over there typically doesn't work during the holidays. They said, let them figure it out. Hopefully you'll have a word and you can come back in January. Long story short, it is now March 26th. We still haven't heard a word from the Namibian government. So we're not going to be going back to Chumkwe. We're sad that we're not going to be able to return to the people that we got to spend a year with. But at the same time, God has just redirected our lives. And really, we don't care where we go because our focus and our aim is for unreached people. But as long as we're moving forward, and in February, we basically just had to say, we've given the Namibian government long enough. They're not going to give us an answer. That's the honest thing of it. It's paperwork system. Our paperwork is probably in somebody's desk somewhere on purpose, to be honest with you. And so we just need to move forward at this point in time. I am encouraged because our team leaders who are native Namibians are actually in the village still. And so there is a young church there. There is a young pastor. And their mission is to continue to disciple and encourage those people that we had a chance. And you'll hear more about those people in just a minute. So that just kind of sums up where we're at. So as we stand here today, we're moving forward. Even though our location has changed, our focus has not changed. And I want to take a few moments, though, to look at the scripture through the lens of living in Africa and God's perspective on life. So if you have your Bible with you, you might not need it. It's a familiar story, but if you have your Bible, I'm going to be referencing Matthew chapter 22, verses 33 through 39. The Ten Commandments are notorious. Even if you're not a Christian, you know of the Ten Commandments. You know the story of the Ten Commandments. And probably within the church, I could probably go around to each one of you this morning and say, what's the Great Commission? And you would be able to tell me what the Great Commission is. And I'd maybe be able to go up to you and say, what is the Great Commandment? And you'd be able to say, well, this is the Great Commandment. This morning, I want us to look at the Great Commandment. But the Great Commission and the Great Commandment, I think, are tied together. Let me say it this way. As a Christian, the Great Commission is kind of like the track that guides us, like a track guides a train to a destination. I want you to think of the Great Commission as that. And it guides us and it keeps us focused. And that's really why we're still here on the planet. After we accepted Christ and wanted to follow him, if there was no reason for us to be here, he'd just take us up to heaven immediately, right? But the Great Commission is go into all the world. Go here, go there, go into all the world, and share the gospel. And so the Great Commission is kind of that track that guides us. And on that journey that we have, like a train goes from station to station, a train's going to go over valleys, it's going to go through rivers, it's going to go through mountain passes, it's going to be windy, it's going to be crazy. And that's our life while we're still here, correct? But as we journey, I think that the great commandment comes into place because really the Great Commandment, it gives purpose to our journey. Why do you want to go from here to here? And so as we look at this story, really people, as they gathered around in the context of the story, they were asking Jesus the same question. So we're on earth, now what? You see, the audience that he had were Pharisees and Sadducees. These people loved the Ten Commandments. They loved it to the degree, all right? And they were sold on those Ten Commandments. And like, well, what about now? So let's look at it. Verse 33, if you got your Bibles. When the crowds heard this, they were astonished at his teachings. Verse 34, hearing that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees and the Pharisees together, one of them, an expert in the law, came up to him and tested him with this question. They said, "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?" So in the story, you see that Jesus is answering questions, and actually we don't have time to go into the what happened beforehand. It's a fascinating story. But basically, he quieted them with his answer. They asked him a very kind of question, and they were thinking it was going to be all based on the Ten Commandments and the law. And then his answer, and they were all just sitting there like, "What? What did he just say? Huh?" And so the Pharisees and Sadducees like, "Okay, let's find somebody. Let's go ask him this question because we got to figure this out." So the guy goes up and he says, "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment of these?" Well, what commandment do you think he's talking about? He's asking about one of the original Ten Commandments, right? What of the original Ten Commandments is the greatest? What should I do here on earth? He's asking, what should I do? Now that you've left me here on earth, I'm trying to figure this question out. You remember what Jesus' response is? To love the Lord your God with all your heart, your mind, and your soul. And the second is like this, to love your neighbor as yourself. You see, the second part of that is basically, in order to love God, you must be willing to love your neighbor as yourself. It is called the Great Commandment, even though it's got two parts, but both parts are connected. Part of me wonders, what were these people thinking again? I mean, he had just silenced them with this answer beforehand. Now they got to be totally dumbfounded because he didn't even answer the question the guy asked. What of the greatest commandment of all? He didn't even mention one of the ten. He comes over here and sets this new thing over here for them. But I think you have to look at it from God's perspective. And what I want to do right now is just kind of share a little bit, and Claudia and I are going to share and try to give you God's perspective on how he views people, how he views life. So I can sum it up this way if you go to the next slide. Really what I think Jesus was saying there when he said, love your neighbor as yourself. If you think of it, in God's economy, people are the currency. And so that is what drives everything. People. People, people, people. Go ahead and go to the next slide. This one might be off the screen, but it's okay. You can kind of get the gist of it. You see, people are there, but God wants us to build relationships with people. Remember what I said earlier? After we became Christ followers, why did he not take us just straight up into heaven? Why did he leave us here? That's the Great Commission, to go and to share. But we have to build relationships with people in order to do that. And that's what Jesus is saying in the Great Commandment. Love your neighbor as yourself. So, and this really didn't become clear to me until I actually went to Africa. Because most of Africa is a relationship-based culture. Here in America, we are very task-oriented. I've got to do this, I've got to do this, I've got to do this, and I've got to do this. But in Africa, it's all about the relationship. If there is a task for us to do today, let's say, I don't know, something as simple as digging a hole for a post, for a fence, okay? That hole will get dug sometime during the day. It doesn't matter when it gets dug. It's just going to happen, all right? At the end of the day, though, what matters is my relationship with my neighbors still good and intact versus the task of getting the hole dug? If the hole gets dug and I damage my relationship with my neighbors, that task was a failure. Make sense? We went to a wedding, or I got invited to a wedding. The wedding was supposed to happen sometime during the day. Long story short, it finally, about 10 o'clock, the wedding was done. Okay? And actually, I didn't even see my wife that day. She went out to the bush to go gather stuff, and I just had to tell my neighbor, I'm going to the wedding. And we just kind of figured out, at the end of the day, we just sat around the table and just shared, it's good to see you today. What did you wind up doing today? You know, and she's like, yeah, I wound up doing this, and it wasn't planned. And I was like, yeah, I didn't either, and it wasn't planned. But at the end of the day, our relationships with our neighbors were still intact, and that's what mattered. So do you see the parallel? Do you see reality coming together there a little bit between the Great Commission, the Great Commandment, and in God's economy, people are the currency. It's what matters. He's focused on people, and he's focused on us building relationships with them. And so that is our focus as we go to unreached people groups. We're not there necessarily to do a bunch of things, because we can get in our task-oriented mindset as Westerners. I'm going to go do this ministry, and I'm going to go do this, and I'm going to go do this, and I'm going to go do this. But yet an African can look at you and say, I don't care what you actually do. It doesn't bother me one bit. I'm more interested in, do you actually know me and are concerned about me? And do we have a relationship? And so many times in Chemkwe, I found myself just sitting, listening, not really doing anything, but I was being. I was just there. So I'm going to let Claudia come up here and just share some examples with you. But I just, before she comes, I just want to say this. So to have a healthy relationship with God, we've got to be engaged with people. And so we just want to share with you right now what that looked like for us. I'll let you go ahead.
I just wanted to start out with John 15:13. It says, greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. Many times when we hear this verse, we think of Jesus. He laid down his life. He died on the cross for us. That's what we're supposed to do. And as Americans, we probably aren't going to have the opportunity to actually die for a friend of ours. But I want us to kind of consider that laying down your life is not necessarily just dying for someone else. It's giving up what you have planned for that day, and it's giving it to another person. I am shy, and I am nervous up here. So to move to a new country, a new culture, a new language, new everything, it was pretty overwhelming. We've been on short-term mission trips to Rwanda, and it's great to go, and you get there, and you're there for just about 10, 15 days, and then you get to come home, and you get to share all the pictures and tell about what God did, and that's great. But to go and to live, it's totally different. We'd probably been living in Chemkwe for about 2 months, and I was having language lessons every week because we were learning a new language called Junkwas. It's a click language, and so it was very difficult, and I'd kind of gotten comfortable to sit with my actual neighbor, my immediate neighbor, and she was my namesake. She had given me her name, so my name was Saba, like her, and so she was kind of my mama, and she would teach me things, but to go across the street, it was kind of scary. The San people live on a conservancy, and it's kind of like an Indian reservation, and there's lots of drunkenness. So across the street, there was lots of things I wasn't comfortable with. But one day, I was walking with my language helper, and we were coming back toward my house, and this old lady yelled at me from underneath the tree, and I didn't understand what she said. So I turned to my language helper, and she interpreted for me, and she said that she was asking why I was afraid of her. And I kind of said, well, I'm not afraid of her. And she's like, well, why don't you come sit with me? And there was really no reason I could say that why I hadn't come and sat with her. And so my language helper and I sat down. And through my broken Junkwas, I could say, Mi kuo Saba, my name is Saba. Mi Hama, America, me, Gea, Chemkwe. And so I was, my name was Saba, and I came from America, and I've come to live in Chemkwe. And she proceeded to tell me her name and all the ladies that were sitting with her. And that day changed my perspective. And it just, it broke me that it was okay to just go. And I sat there probably for an hour with these ladies and didn't understand a word that they were saying, but I was just there. But I had started, I had stepped across that street. And that very next week, that old lady, she actually passed away. And so it hit me again like a ton of bricks that my time here was short with these people, that their lives were fragile. And there's not much time, and so you have to be brave and take that step. And so from that day forward, I would open the door in the morning, and I would say, okay, God, what do you want me to do today? I had a few tasks that I needed to get done, but if they didn't get done until after dark when I came home, it was okay. So I started wandering across the street more and more, and I would ask for permission to sit with them. Normally the ladies were cooking or making jewelry. And most of the time I was completely lost in the conversation because I was still learning June class. I could speak a little and I could only understand little bitty words here and there. And they spoke so fast. at first when I would sit with them, they would have tea amongst themselves, and I would just sit there. And then eventually that they got comfortable with me, and they would offer me a cup of tea. And then, right before we were coming home, they were actually coming to my house, and we were enjoying tea at my house. And so I had become part of the ladies' group. And, you know, through the process of sitting down with them, I would watch them make their jewelry. And at one day, I asked them, can you teach me how to make their jewelry? This is one of their necklaces. It's made out of ostrich egg. And so a lady handed me a few little broken beads in the little drill thing, and she showed me how to drill. And within probably about 30 minutes, I had blisters on my hands because my hands were not tough like theirs. But every day I would go over and they would hand me a few more beads and my hands got tougher and tougher. And by the time I would get a whole handful, you know, if I ended up finishing those, they would give me another. So it's kind of like my quota for the day. but I was being included with what they did. I was being a part of their lives. And so after they'd learned, taught me how to drill, I got to learn all the different processes of making just one single bead. It's like six steps to make one little bead. The other thing I got to do was go out in the bush. They were hunter-gatherers.
If you'll go backwards, I'd skip through them, but go backwards about three or four. Go forward two more, sorry. One more. There you go.
So we would go out in the bush. They still cook all their food over a campfire or just a little cooking fire. And this is really a small bundle compared to what they would gather. But they were always concerned that I couldn't carry as much as they could. But these little ladies, they would have it on their heads and under both arms, and they would have a baby strapped to their back, and, you know, they were amazing. I think the next picture shows while we were out there, it wasn't just to gather firewood. It was to gather food, and so they taught me out in the bush what berries they could eat, what roots they dug for. We would pick beetles off the trees and pull their legs off, and the caterpillars and all those kinds of things. And so I have eaten all those things. And by God's grace, I didn't get sick by any of them. Sometimes I had to say a little prayer, God, please help me swallow them. but because I was willing to go out and go gather what they ate, and I was willing to learn how they cooked it, and I would eat with them, that opened up door after door after door, because I wasn't just coming to do something for them. I was coming to share my life with them and to learn their ways. These are beetles. Very good picture. There's roots. It's kind of like an onion root. They also collected lots of green different things and nuts and berries. And it's not a very good picture because just the connection. But we also, there were two types of caterpillars I ate, one really big one and one little. And one of them they fried and one of them they roasted. And so the ones in the oil were pretty good because they tasted like French fries. So, and so
she brought one home to me and said, "You have to eat this." I'm like, so I'm like, okay. And so I put it on. Oh, it tastes like a French fry. It's okay.
If you'll go to the next photo, I think.
Which one do you want?
With guacamole.
It's actually back.
Oh, back.
Go back some.
One more. This is Guangna, and we formed a really special relationship. She's probably in her 80s or maybe even her 70s. It's really hard to tell how old people were. But I would help her make beads all the time, and she was the main person I went out into the bush with, and I was kind of like her granddaughter. I would go out to the bush, and she would speak Junquas the whole way. She didn't know any English, and so she would say Junquas, and I would repeat whatever she said, and she would just giggle because I didn't say it correctly. And so she would repeat it, and I would try to repeat it again. She was very patient with me. She would teach me the names of all the little things we were picking up, and sometimes I would remember them, and sometimes I wouldn't. But she was the one that... That's okay. To share an actual cup of water with somebody, and I just, by faith, I was like, God, I feel this is what I need to do. Please protect me. If she has something, you know, disease-wise, then I'm just going to lay my life in your hands. And so we shared that cup of water together, and that just broke down barriers, big barriers. On the way back, the sun was starting to set, and the temperature was dropping. We lived in the Kalahari Desert, so as soon as that sun dropped, the temperature started to drop. And she actually took off her outer cloth and wrapped it around me. In that... was probably the sweetest moment when I knew I had been welcomed into her family and into the community.
So if you'll go to the next couple slides. So this is our house. This is Chumkwai, Namibia. It's in the edge of the Kalahari Desert. We live with the Bushmen. And this is what it looked like shortly after we arrived. You can see there's nothing around us. Behind us is the everything that you can imagine wildlife-wise, et cetera. The nearest town was about 3.5 hours behind us, one way. So nearest grocery store, everything. Go to the next slide. Just a simple brick structure with a metal roof. That is our outhouse and bathhouse, which was great. It worked just fine. Really, really good. It's been weird coming back to America with running water, just to give you perspective, weird perspective. Go ahead and go to the next slide if you want. This one, they love playing. This is kind of like Mincali, and it's on a big scale, but you can see the guys are kind of lined up. It's like a five person versus five person community game, and they just debate for like 10 minutes, and then they figure out what the next move is, and it's amazing. And I spent many a days just sitting there listening to them just click along and just debate with each other on what the next move was. And guys would spend the whole entire day playing this game. Sometimes they would get in trouble with their wives because there was firewood that needed to be gathered. But anyway, go ahead and go to the next slide. So this is me, and this is our immediate neighbor. This is Dom. Busha, as they call it. He gave me his name. So my June last name was Dom. Claudia's was Saba. This is Dom. His wife was Saba. So they were our neighbors. And this is what we did. We sat around a lot of times and just were there learning. He always was into something, building something, doing something. So I could hang out with him for like an hour. And then a little bit later on, we'd start just doing something. And I would pick up and just try to help. Just help whatever I could do. Go ahead and go to the next slide. Yeah, this is me and him at church. He started to go to church. We kind of attended here and there, but he would go to church with me every Sunday at least. When we went to Kenya to go to our Africa-based orientation, I bought a shirt for him. Just kind of Africa's a big gift giving. It's kind of just a thing that you do. And so this is actually this shirt I got in Kenya that I'm wearing here, and that's him with his shirt. You can, just for perspective, you can see I look like a giant compared to him. He's probably one of the tallest Bushmen that there is. So just that's a perspective of how these people are. I mean, you saw Guantanamo with Claudia and how small she was compared to Claudia. They're known as the little people of the Kalahari. And they really are little and small. Go ahead and go to the next slide. Part of my day would just be I would open the door. I would go to language lesson. I would come back from language lesson, and I would just see what the guys were doing. Here we're just making a little shelf. This is in our yard. It's Dom and, the guy in the back. Can't remember. We just call him Small Guy because he was really small. He looked like a kid, but he was a grown adult. So it's kind of hard to tell in the picture, but this is our front yard. This is Dom's, what we would call a shack, just a bunch of metal leaned up against to kind of keep them dry when it did rain. And then over here is some of the more traditional huts. Go ahead and go to the next slide. One of the biggest things that we wanted really... Well, let me back up. Forget what I just said. Let me go back to what I was saying earlier. That one of the lessons that I learned was that relationships really matter. And remember, in God's economy, people are the currency. And this is a prime example of that right here. This is our house getting painted. And I didn't realize this when I first got over there. But through just learning from my team leader who was an African himself and just saying, hey, this is how things happen over here. This is how things work. And so our house needed to be painted to get waterproofed. And so I asked him, I said, well, how would you do it in Africa? You know, and he said, well, you probably don't want to pay people, because if you pay people, then they're going to think of you, oh, they've got the money, they're going to pay them, and they're just going to do the task, and it's going to get done. And I said, what if I went to a couple of my neighbors and offered them something in return for helping me paint my house? He said, that's a great idea. And I knew winter was coming, and it gets down to freezing at night. And so when we went to town, I bought a couple blankets. And so I went to Dom, one of my neighbors, and then I went to Dom Oma, which is a small Dom. That's what that means. He lived across the street, and I went to both of them, and they had families, and I said, hey, I need to paint the house. I've got paint. I've got rollers. Can you guys help me paint my house? And they said, and just out of a token of thank you, I want to give you guys blankets because I know winter's coming. Because they don't have heat. None of us had heat. In our houses, because it warms up to about 60 or 70 during the day. It just gets really cold for a little while, and you just tuck in the covers, you know, at night. Well, lo and behold, my language helper at the time, I think's right here, and his two other buddies were there that day. Long story short, our house got 3 coats of paint in 5 hours. Okay, these people are not known for doing things on time and on task. All right, but I did not put one brush on the house. I did not do anything. You know what I did? I made sure they had paint in their buckets, and I talked to them as they went. Claudia fixed up a huge meal of macaroni noodles and some tomato sauce and something else like that, and she went around and fed the wives lunch and all the family in our neighborhood we had a big old feast there in the yard. And it was a great day. Our house got painted. People were there. They were just loving on us. We were loving them back. And guess what? The house got painted too. I share that to say that one of our teammates took the Western view, and they actually hired one person. I don't know how much they paid him, but it took about 3 weeks for this one guy to paint their whole entire house. So I'm not saying that we are perfect, but that, you know, relationships really do matter, and people matter. And I wanted to share that story that sometimes the task is not the focus. The people are the focus, and they should be. Go to the next slide, if you don't mind. So this is Dom. We're actually starting to make my traditional June Quas hunting bow. They're hunter-gatherers, and for a white person to get a bow made for them my team leader said I don't know of anybody else ever having that honor. Normally the tourists can come in and they can buy them in the little shop. They're little small toy ones. And we would go out into the bush to go gather firewood and to go get stuff, and he was constantly scouting for the correct materials to make my hunting bow. You can go ahead and go to the next slide. This Claudia shared the story of Guantan putting the wrap around her. This is that evening. We actually we're out in a village, and I'm driving, and Dom goes, "Hey, turn here." And so I turn, and of course, you know, you're out in the middle of nowhere. So I'm just trusting that he knows where we are. And we wind up at this spring that they've put a concrete thing around, and it's actually a watering hole. All these little things you see right here, okay, that's elephant dung. There's tons of wild elephants out there. So we went out there to go see if we could see any. Had to be very cautious, though. Elephants are these are wild elephants. They can kill you, and they will charge you. So it wasn't like a tourist thing. This was like we went out there with a lot of caution. But we just did stuff, crazy stuff like that, you know? Just building relationships. Just, yeah, we could have went back to the house down the safe way to the road, but no. He was like, take a right here, and just took a right, went out to the bush, you know? Go ahead to the next slide. So this is this is what the traditional bow and arrow looks like. You have a quiver, you have the bow, and then you have animal sinew, which is the ligaments that make up the string. And then this is just hide, and so it just gets carried. Inside are the arrows, and the way that they kill an animal is they have a poison that they can get from, and they know the exact beetle and the exact tree to get it from. It puts it on the arrow tip. They shoot the animal. It poisons the animal. The animal slowly dies. They have to track it, follow it for maybe up to a day, and then they will finally kill it, gut it, and take it back. So that's kind of the way that they hunt. There's no firearms, nothing like that. It's traditional bow and arrow, and they make it all themselves. So go to the next slide, if you don't mind. So there we are. This is actually my bow and arrow. This is the night that Uncle presented it to me. We started in May in the process, and he handed this to me the week before we left. So we haven't been able to go hunt yet. So I'm hoping when we go back to go visit them next month that we will be able to go hunt. And he'll actually show me how to shoot a bow and arrow because I've never done it in my life. yeah, he taught me everything, down to the animal hides here, down to what tree to go dig up to get this root, to how to burn this in the ground over fire so that you suck out the moisture and you knock out the inside and it's a hollow, wonderful tube. It's just amazing stuff, amazing things. Go ahead and go to the next slide if you don't mind. And kind of a culmination of a lot of this comes down to this. One night, we were sitting around just hanging out outside, and a truck drove up from the conservancy, and we noticed blood coming out of the back of it, and people ran over to it, and they called Uncle over, because he's kind of the big man in the community. And I went over there and I looked and I'm like, wow, that's a lot of meat. That's a big rib. And so I asked him, I'm like, what is this? Jetike. And he goes, ow. And, or, yeah. And I was like, really? And he said, yeah, it's an elephant. And so an elephant had died north of town, and they were distributing the meat to the villages. So literally, an elephant fed a whole village that day. And so I helped him take the meat, put it down on a piece of tin, and we started dividing it up for each family that was kind of in our neighborhood. And then we got to the end, and he's like, no, here's your part. And I was like, really? He's like, yeah, here's your part. And you see, these people have nothing. They don't eat, our neighbors don't eat meat. They're lucky if they get a meal with meat in it once a week. We can go to the store and go buy meat because we have the financial resources to do that. We actually have a vehicle. And so for them to say, no, here's a piece of meat. You're part of this community. You're part of this neighborhood. Just kind of for us, I guess, for Claudia and I was like, wow, yeah, we've been accepted into this community. A little bit, not all the way, but it's just a little small step. And so I'm not, I hope you hear me. We're not standing here boasting or saying we did it right because we've messed up a lot of times. But I think you can see that if you really are concerned about people and building relationships with them, that's what matters in the long run. Go ahead and go to the next slide. So actually the elephant was pretty good, believe it or not. So as we have to say goodbye to Chumque, that's me and Dom walking on the road to church one day. It's sad. Our hearts are sad that we have to say goodbye to these people and we can't live with them. But we are going to be able to go back and visit them from time to time. But we do know that Zek and Anita, our team leaders, are going to be able to be there and continue what God has already started. I will share this, that right before we left, I found out that Dom read Afrikaans, which is kind of the local trade language. And I was able to go get a Bible in Afrikaans. And I gave it to him, and I said, now, when I come back, I want you to go ahead and start in Genesis, and then we'll talk about this when I get back. And that was in November. I found out 2 weeks later that he asked to be baptized. So that's why we're there. Our focus is unreached people groups. There's somebody who's reached. Amen. You know? So that being said, we need to move forward because the Namibian government won't let us be there anymore. So what I want to do, just with the few minutes we have left, is briefly introduce where we're going now. So if you can go to the next slide. We're going to be going to the Digo people, and they live in Kenya. If you go to the next slide, and this is the one that you'll have to tap on the screen, we're going to do a little flyover video. So we're going to start right here where we're at, 55 Lips Lane, Walnut Grove Baptist Church, or Presbyterian Church, sorry. We're cruising over the Atlantic, and there's the car. Yeah. We're going to a minute in Namibia. So once it settles, yep, Namibia is right here. This is South Africa. This is where we were living, and we are going to be living up here. So you can kind of see where this is the equator right through here. So I think we're getting ready to move into Kenya. Malawi was down here. This is Malawi. That's Malawi. No, you're not that far away. So this is Kenya. This is Nairobi, the capital, which you've probably heard about. And we're going to be all the way on the coast, pretty much. We're going to be about 30 minutes inland in a place called Kwale County, is what it's referred to as the Kwale Township. And the Digo people live up and down this coast, right through here. So Kenya, this is Tanzania, this is Ethiopia, Somalia. And as we zoom in, here is the port city of Mombasa, if you've heard of Mombasa. That's the port city of Mombasa. And we're going to be living kind of on this, you see this green area right here? it's kind of a ridge. In Kowali Township is here, and we're going to be living in one of the villages around that. So, okay. So that's kind of that. If you go ahead and go to the next slide, I'm going to get Claudia to come up here and give you a brief overview of the Digo people.
So the Digo people are a Bantu tribe. They originated in Africa up here and then migrated east and then south. The San people that we were with were Khoisan, and they were not a Bantu people. Bantu tribes are what you probably traditionally think of Africans, or the black Africans. When you go further south, the Africans are lighter. If you go further north, the Africans are lighter. They look more Arabic in northern Africa, actually, because you've got Egypt and all those kind of countries. And so if you'll go to the next slide on, let's see. The Digo people are actually a group of 9 different tribes that kind of come together, and they're called the 9 towns. And they were pushed south by war. And the Digo have 3 sources of income. They traded with Muslim Arabs, farming, and then fishing. And this is kind of the trade routes from the Middle East where the Arabs, and they came down the coast. And where we're going to be is kind of in the middle, right there. And so that's how the Arabs kind of got down along the coast of Africa. And in the beginning of, or the end of the 19th century, the beginning of the 20th century, there were some really bad droughts in the area. And there wasn't enough food for people. And they had this tradition called blood money, or kore, in which they would give themselves or one of their children as a temporary collateral for a food loan. And if the debt could not be paid, that person remained a slave. And they were taken down to the coast, to Mombasa, and they were either shipped around the world as slaves or they stayed there. If they stayed there, they were given the opportunity to become free only if they converted to Islam. And so by 1920, a lot of the Digo people had been converted to Islam. Excuse me. Most of the Digo people have no real understanding of what the Quran says. Few of them have studied Islam. Most of them is just a superficial knowledge of what the principles are in their doctrine. But Islam has altered their religious and political structure. They've adopted their attire, the little caps that the men wear, the wraps that the women wear. They've changed their diet according to Islamic practices. But because they haven't taken on the full religion, it's considered a folk Islam. They still have all their traditional practices with animistism, which is basically you believe non-human things have spirits, and then they also worship their ancestors. And so they seek their ancestors for guidance and for help. Today, they still have blood sacrifices for exorcisms, for evil spirits, and they do consult witch doctors on a regular basis. Kenya, I don't know if the next slide. If you look at this, this is what's considered Christian Africa, the bottom section, and here's Kenya. So most of Kenya is considered Christian. The northern section, that dark green, is 50% or more Islamic, and that lighter green is 15 to 50% Islamic. The Digo people are considered 80% folk Islam. They're 20% the Amistist, and there's just 0.1% Christians. So there's just a few Christians there. The Digo have never been successfully reached by the gospel because of their deep roots in their traditional ways and the folk Islam added on top of that. So it's a difficult task to actually reach them. The Bible has been translated into their language. They've got the full New Testament, and the Old Testament is in its final revisions. They do have the Jesus film in Chidigo, which is their heart language. And so there is opportunity. When we were with the San people, they didn't have the Bible at all in their language. But with the Digo, there have been people trying to reach them for decades. And so they do have the Bible in their language. It's the problem is we get it in their language, but they can't read. And so we had the opportunity to go to England back in November before we came back to the States. And we went to a Bible storing conference. And so we learned the process of actually sitting down and doing story sets in a language, a new language, and so that they have stories, because that's how they traditionally share things anyways. And so if we can get a story set in their language that they can just orally share with each other, that will have a greater impact quicker than actually doing a literacy program. So that is one of the ways we plan on reaching out to the Digo, is helping them get a story set in their language of the Bible. Kenya also boasts having the best climate in Africa. They have two rainy seasons, and the long one's from March to May, and then the short one is in November, and that's where my heart and passion is. It's agriculture. That's my training, and what God has just given me a gift to be able to put a seed in the ground and just grow it. I practice a technique called Farming God's Way, which has conservation agricultural practices, and it adds the biblical principles. I mean, the whole Bible talks about God being the farmer. I mean, he started out with a garden, and so God is the great farmer, and he teaches through the Bible how he actually produces things. And so this practice actually teaches the people that we should acknowledge God and God alone. And it walks through just staking him as a claim in our life, and that our life should reflect his glory in all that we do. And so I hope to, since they are they're farmers, fishers, and then traders, and so that's how I hope to reach the Digo.
And Claudia had mentioned the story set. That's going to be some of my focus and some other things. But first of all, we've got to go learn the language. And we've just got to be. We've got to start over from scratch. We've got to wipe the slate clean, take the lessons that we learned from Namibia, and go in and just be and learn. Swahili is the prominent language, the trade language that is spoken. However, that is not the heart language. That is not their tribal language. Chidigo is their tribal language. And so what life looks like for us right now is we'll leave here, and we'll actually leave the U.S. in a couple weeks, Easter weekend, this Monday after Easter. We'll fly over to Africa, go back to Namibia. We left our stuff in Namibia because we thought we were returning. So we got to go get our stuff. So while we're there, we're going to go ahead and go back into Chumkwe and just go love on them, say thank you. It's good to see you guys. Just check in with everybody. Spend a week in Chumkwe. And then after that, and then we're going to start making our way to Kenya. But before we get to the village where we're going to live, we've got to go to language school. So we're going to go into Tanzania for 2 months and learn Swahili, and try to get a good foundation of Swahili. Because Chidigo, the heart language, 40% of it's based on Swahili. So if we know Swahili, we can start communicating a little bit better. And then that'll help us learn Chidigo. But the story set that I would want to like to work on would be in their heart language, which is Chidigo. So that's kind of a little bit about what life looks like us on the floor. We thank you guys for your patience in listening this morning. We've got some newsletters back there on the table. If you want to sign up for our newsletter, email newsletter, you can do that. A lot of the stories that we've shared, we kind of put them in the newsletter. We also have a blog. You can go to the next slide. Go to the next slide. That's just Manioc. That's a picture of some Digo kids, so you can just kind of see. It's totally different than Chumquay. Green. They have rain. Go to the next slide. So this is our blog. We put stuff on there all the time about stories that we have, what happens, and stuff like that. So you can visit that. That's on our prayer cards are back there. It's got our blog address on it. So you can, it's right there on the table right there. Yeah. Do you have any questions that we might be able to answer real quick before? Yeah. There were some criteria that we kind of had after the door closed for Namibia. The question was, how do we pick the Digo people? We were presented four people groups, different people groups. AIM really wanted us to go to a kind of a visa-safe country, if I can say that, one that where AIM has been a long time, and they pretty much can guarantee that we're going to get a visa, and it's going to be a two-year visa. They didn't feel it was right for us after we'd been yanked all over the place by the Namibian government. The other criteria really was along the lines of what Claudia shared. Her passion is agriculture and it's farming. So as long as they had about 500 centimeters of rain or more, we're good. So a place where they're actually an agriculture people, where she could go and start doing farming God's way. And they wanted us to go into an existing team that was already there, that this team that we're going to has been there for 2 years. And so we're able to kind of, and they were wanting another couple to join. The way that the team's organized is we're going to be in villages. Kind of like here, you have Crossnor and you have, you know, Elk Park. So we would just be in those different villages where people are at. And so we're about 10, 15 minutes from each other. So they were wanting another couple to come in to join the team, to go be put in another village to kind of start building relationships. So. Good question. Thank you. Any other questions? Yeah. Does it get to them blood? And yeah. They know what to use. Time has brought that out. I've asked the same question. They're like, it's good, but you don't touch it. You don't cut yourself and touch it because it'll kill you. But you can eat the meat. Yeah. And maybe it's because they cook it. They cook it out. I guess. I don't know. It's a good question. I actually need to ask and see if I can figure that out when I'm there. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Yes. Any food that we just could not eat. There were foods that I didn't prefer, but I pretty much put everything that was in front of me in my mouth. There were things that if I could not have it again, it would be great. The beetles mixed with the greens from... But that was okay, though. I mean, it was edible, but yeah. I wouldn't take a raw beet, although it had to be roasted. So, yeah, and we did eat all kinds of meats because, elephant and kudu and porcupine and eland. Uncle and I went out and we found a turtle, and he showed me how to cook that up. And then we had a Kalahari toad, a big old frog. We cooked that thing up. And I'm telling you, that is the best meat. The frog legs, oh my gosh, those were so good. You might think, ugh, I'm just telling you, they are good. Whew. So, all right, yes, sir. In Chumquay, that's the second largest aquifer is under Chumquay, and so there's just a borehole, pumps it up into a big plastic tank, and it comes on down, and we had water. Where we're going to go, it's kind of sketchy. But no running water in the house. My legs were the running water. I'd run and go get the water. from the local tap, but it's okay. Yeah. Yes. That was it. Yeah, there were nobody. There's nobody else around. You'd have to go 3.5 hours into town to find the next church. There's just nothing. Yeah. In Chumkwe, there's about 4,000 Bushmen. So Claudia said it's like an Indian reservation. So if you look at a map and you go northeast Namibia and you kind of just draw a big square, I can't remember, like 10,000 hectares or something like that is what they gave them. And they said, this is yours. You manage it. You live here. And so there's about 4,000 Bushmen that live, and they live in villages that are centered around those boreholes. So there's about 40 villages in Chumkwe, around Chumkwe, that where they actually live. Chumkwe is kind of the town center. It's got the clinic and the court and the one gas pump, things like that. Oh. All right. Any other questions? Thank you guys for listening. I hope we haven't gone too long. And like I said, if you want to keep track of what's going on and what God's doing over in Africa, you can just sign up for our email newsletter. Like I said, we send it out about every 3 months, so we won't spam you. Trust me, you'll eventually get it. And yeah, so thank you, Brother Kurt. Appreciate it. Yeah.
Well, that was exciting. I learned a lot. And two things I think I can safely say about your ministry. Number one, since it has changed, God obviously has something really exciting in the future for you. And number two, you left a place after a short time that you wanted to stay, and it may feel as if... I don't want to say wasted time, but not completed. But I think what you'll find is that the valuable things you learned will carry over into that new ministry. So God doesn't make mistakes. You know, He's moving you around where He wants you for a reason. So just wanted to share that with you. Enjoyed it very much. Did you want to say something else? All right. Our refrigerator is where we post those things, because that's where we visit a lot.
So
you know,
please,
so
put
them on your refrigerators. Yes. Well, that's wonderful. Why don't we go ahead and form our fellowship circle, and we'll have a closing prayer, and we'll just kind of have a send-off prayer for Jeremy and Claudia, too. It's been an exciting time, and I hope to hear from you guys again soon to see what God's doing. It's always exciting to be able to hear mission reports of, we get stuck in our own little world here, and you know, you don't realize what's going on out there, and God's doing a lot of things. Anybody have any prayer requests, praise reports you want to share before we close in prayer? Father, we just thank you for Jeremy and Claudia, and we thank you for what you're doing in their lives, you're doing in the lives of the people.